Hi, everyone. This is volume two of the Shouts from the Couch, Couchcast. This is Jeremy, and I'm joined, as always, by Greg. How you doing, Greg?
Never better, Gervo.
All right. Well, it has been a million years since our last episode, and we apologize for that, although I'm sure if you were holding your breath, that's unfortunate for you.
Yeah, there's something going on if you're that addicted to our podcast after that one episode.
Yeah, although I will say that if nothing else, we were pretty much exactly on the nose as far as like 60 minutes. Like, there's no giant bomb 3-hour megathon podcast. It was 60 minutes, right on the money, and we didn't even know that was just a happy accident, I guess. And I'm clearly rambling already. So
we're going to try and keep the streak going, though. 60 minutes exactly.
60 minutes.
Mid-sense.
Exactly. So, Mr. Greg, what have you been playing? Talk to me.
Well, for the longest time, Mass Effect 3 has really been dominating my playtime. I've had limited playtime. That's why it's taken me so long to get through it. But it was a weird situation, right? Because you read the reviews and it gets all these great reviews. And the weird thing about the reviews, I don't know about the reviews you read, but nobody said anything about the ending, like whether it was the ending sucking or the ending just being out of the blue. Like, that's usually, like, you can talk about that without spoiling it, but no reviews mentioned it. So I was really kind of surprised.
Yeah, nobody talked about
chatter on the web. And I was telling you, you know, it happened kind of weirdly because I was trying to stay away from spoilers and I was kind of just chipping away at the game, like a half hour here and a half hour there. It's probably not the best way to play Mass Effect. So I thought like a lot of the content was good, but I eventually just got to a place where I just kind of stopped caring about the story, even though I played all the way since one. So I actually just said, screw it. I'm going to listen to the spoiler cast. I listened to like the CAG cast and whatever other show was doing it. And even what they were saying about the ending didn't make much sense to me. But it was such a weird ending that I played it that night and I finished it that night. And the spoiler cast didn't really spoil anything because there was just so much weird nonsense going on.
When you consider what actually happens, the fact that there was such a furor, I have no idea what the hell that was about. I mean, I appreciate that, you know, I don't know. I guess I can see that people were upset because it wasn't like a totally concrete. I don't know what people were expecting. And when you consider like how big that franchise was and how, I don't know. I mean, I guess the number one complaint that I heard was that ultimately, you know, they made this whole big hubbub about how, you know, it was your game and it was your experience and your choices mattered and all that stuff. But ultimately, everyone's ending was pretty much the same.
I think that was the disappointment for me.
But you know what? Like, fuck you. Like, like, where do you get off? Like, well, no, not fuck you. But I mean,
okay.
You know, I think there's this sort of, I don't want to sound like all like grumpy old man here, but there's an entitlement thing in today's gamer culture that is sort of out of control.
I totally agree with you. Like, the fact that there was an FTC complaint against BioWare is ridiculous.
It is absurd.
But as far as everybody getting the same ending, I hear the frustration, if only because that's kind of the way BioWare sold the game. Mm-hmm. Your choices matter. But at the end of the day, if Garrus died at the end of Mass Effect 2, you just had some Arcturian stand in and do what Garrus did in Mass Effect 3.
Dude, if Rex died at the end of 1, you totally didn't get to participate in any of that stuff. And I think
Rex.
Oh, you did? Yeah, that's right. You did kill Rex
in
1.
But I think what Rex would have done, Reeve did instead. He just kind of stepped into Rex's shoes. I don't know. Maybe I missed a bunch of content that I would have had for Rex. But anyway, I think at the end of the day, like, you know, it wasn't that much of a surprise to me that they didn't pull off the ending. I mean, plenty of people were disappointed with the giant T-1000 at the end of 2, right?
Right.
It really, like, in Mass Effect, it really was the journey. And I have to say, all the side quest content, all the Codex content, which I read pretty much all of it. I don't know if I'm either proud or ashamed to say that. But it was really sterling stuff. So, you know, it's, I think it's hard to end a video game. So I think I've kind of come to a serene place where I don't really... That's not where I look for the payoff in a video game. So the fact that I really stopped caring about the story in Mass Effect 3 by the end didn't even really bother me so much. I was frankly just glad to be done with it because it was pretty much the only thing I was... It was dominating 90% of my playtime. So now I'm psyched to get on to some other stuff.
Yeah.
What have you been up to lately?
What have I been up to? You know, it's funny because ever since I finished... I mean, I finished Mass Effect 3 like... I don't know, 3 weeks ago, a month ago, and I've been kind of floating around with a whole bunch of things. Like, the big thing, like, you know, my before I played it, it was my personal sort of sleeper pick for Game of the Year, was Fez. That
right.
finally came out after 5 years. I was totally freaked out. It's the game I've been wanting to play, like, almost more than anything else. And, you know... I liked it. I liked it a lot. And it's entirely possible that my expectations for it were so sky high that it was never going to be able to sort of match my expectations. But I have to... It didn't quite sweep me away that I was hoping that it would sweep me away. And I really don't know why that is.
Well, I could tell you that I actually knew very little about it. You were telling me for months how excited you were. And... pretty much based on that, I just went on a blackout. So I had no expectations, except I knew that you were really into it.
Mm.
So I've played a few hours of it, and I think it's fantastic. I wasn't expecting the be-all, end-all. So for me, it's just going in blind and discovering this thing that feels fresh, yet totally scratching a nostalgia itch, and involved enough and beautiful enough to look at that I've absolutely no trouble picking it up and just spending some time with it.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, you know, like, the game is everything that, you know, like, the platforming is really interesting and unique. The art style is incredible. The music is some of the best game music I've ever heard. Although, it is missing the music that was playing during the very first gameplay reveal, which I'm a little bit bummed about because that, more than anything else, kind of sold me on the game, believe it or not. But, the thing about Fez is that it's a little too smart for its own good, I find. Like, the first couple hours of the game, you're really sort of playing around with this platforming mechanic and the twisting of the world, and you're really getting into the graphics and the different environments and all this stuff, and, like, it's super interesting. And it's very accessible, it's very approachable, and, yeah, there's all this weird sort of, you know, like... writing on the wall, and you don't really know what it means, but you figure, well, you know, whatever, it doesn't totally matter. And so basically that'll get you so far, but after a certain point, that stuff does start to matter and becomes less of a platformer puzzler and more of a I don't even know how to describe it, but it, like, this weird sort of like cryptography game where you're trying to decipher all these things, and, you know, after a while the jumping around becomes totally second nature and not even the point. You know, like, everything is really easy to get to. It's the hidden stuff that's really where the game, like, the whole, you know, once you get to New Game Plus, the game just the focus on what you're trying to do just totally changes. And
that's what I heard. And I don't know exactly what kind of turn it takes, and people have gone to pains not to really spoil it outright, but...
Well, it's not a twist. I don't want to... It's not like the story suddenly changes. It's
right.
Just that what it is that you're trying to do changes, and you have to switch up your approach. And that's where you see all these people with handwritten notes and you know... And there comes a point where, like, you have to go to a walkthrough if you know that you're not smart enough to figure something out. And that's a little, you know, I hate feeling defeated like that. Because I'm not smart enough to figure some of this stuff out, and nor do I have the patience to...
Well, you used the word cryptography, and I think there's probably a reason that there's not a genre of gaming cryptography games.
Well, besides those little things.
It sounds like it makes my head hurt too much.
Yeah, I mean, they have those little things, you know, next to the crossword puzzles in the newspaper, and, you know, and that's fun for people who like that sort of cipher substitution. And that's kind of what this is. But it's hard, and it's esoteric, and it's kind of a pain in the ass.
Well, let me ask you this. It was 800 Microsoft points, right?
I think that's $10, yeah.
Okay. So for somebody who plays through once, doesn't do any of the new game plus, do you feel like they got their $10 worth?
I think that's entirely up to the user. I mean, yeah. I know that for me, I got my money's worth, but I also know that that I'm never going to finish it unless I kind of just cheat my way through the end. I've gotten pretty far through. I mean, I've gotten, for those of you who don't know, and I don't know, Greg, if you don't know, there's like 32 regular cubes, and then there's 32 anti-cubes. And like the final percentage, like when you complete the game, is something like 204%, like, or something like that. I don't remember. Like it's very like Castlevania-esque. Like, in order to really see everything, your final number is going to be like around 204 or something like that. I am at around 156. I've gotten all of the cubes. I've gotten quite a number of the anti-cubes. I've found all 4 artifacts. I've found all 9 treasure maps. I found a whole bunch of stuff, and I know where all of the stuff that I haven't gotten is. It's just that in order to get all the final cubes, I have to do some serious mental gymnastics that I just don't know that I have the patience to sort of deal with.
Well, that's it. You're bringing up something that I actually wanted to touch on. I think back in the days when, you know, you'd get a Nintendo game every, I don't know, month or 2 months or whatever. So you'd milk it and you would play it and you would play it as a completionist and try and explore every nook and corner because you did have just so much time to throw at that game. I think it's been a painful transition for me from that kid to today when I'm faced with a game like, say, Skyrim or, you know, Grand Theft Auto 4, when I still have the same compulsion, like this same little OCD tendency that tells me I want to find everything. But I've started to realize and be okay with the fact that I get to a point where it stops being fun. I'll give you an example. My brother was a huge Oblivion fan, loved Fallout, and then he got into Batman, and he loved Batman. So he's playing Arkham City, and I told him, like, listen, Skyrim came out. It's the game you've been waiting for. It's the game you really want to play. But for weeks and weeks, he wouldn't turn to Skyrim because he was still chasing down Riddler trophies. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, it cannot have still been fun for him. But I think that's how we were trained as gamers. Mm-hmm. When you know, like you just felt like you had to go looking, you had to scour and find every little thing. And we never really noticed, I think, that as games got much, much bigger and as, you know, certain kinds of games got a lot tighter, I think we just kind of, a lot of us just stopped noticing that it wasn't any fun anymore.
Well, you know, I think the other thing about that is that developers have gone about it in a different way. Like, I remember a million years ago, I was upset. Like, I remember at our first job, or at least where I met you at the internet company that we worked at, I had a laptop, and I somehow someone gave me a copy of Quake 2. And when I wasn't answering phones or dealing with, you know, mail or whatever, I was playing Quake 2 on God mode. And I was specifically going after all the hidden areas because that shit was awesome. And I remember doing a similar thing with Duke Nukem Forever back, like, the original... Well, not Duke Nukem Forever. Duke Nukem 3D, sorry. Duke Nukem Forever is a totally different thing. Duke Nukem 3D... on the PC, like, 15 years ago or whatever. And, like, I loved exploring. I loved, like, finding all the hidden things. And I never found all of them. There's, like, two different points I want to cover here, and I'm kind of, like, ADD about it. I want to go back to something earlier that you had said about difficulty. Because because I've gotten to a point now where I know that, like, there's certain things that I'm not going to that are just sort of beyond me. And a perfect case in point for me, and it's also relevant to where we are now, is Trials, the new Trials Evolution game on Xbox Live Arcade. That game is awesome. It's the same game as the first game, except it has much better environments and better graphics, and it has, like, better leaderboard integrations, and it's also, like, really hard. And I've basically, you know, I sort of raced through everything I could race through, and I've kind of hit the difficulty wall, and I know that I've kind of there's really not much farther that I'm going to go. I might squeeze an extra hundredth of a second on a run, but I don't have the time anymore to spend hours and hours and hours sort of beating my head against the wall for that extra hundredth of a second. Like, the payoff isn't as strong. And they do a really good job with giving you that carrot with, like, showing you where your friends are and, you know, having that sort of that little dot that you're chasing or that you've passed on the track. I mean, they do as good a job of keeping that carrot on the stick for you. But the truth of the matter is, I just don't have the time or the patience to sort of allow myself to be led like that. And it's, I don't know, I guess it's kind of a weird transition phase, you know, just being older and not having time to sort of dedicate yourself to stuff like
well,
that.
Well, at least in Trials, they are giving you that carrot, and there is that incentive, and, you know, the reality is you still can't just invest your life in that one little game. But, you know, even, like, there are still people out there, I think, that even where there isn't a payoff, even where you're trying to just, you know, do the same Batman swoop whatever for 2 hours and all you get is a little green question mark. I mean, that's a shitty payoff, but, you know, people still spend hours and hours doing it. But I think I've finally gotten to the point where I used to have these little hang-ups being, you know, I just turned 40.
Happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I am from that generation where I did feel like I had to do it, and I used to feel like I couldn't play on easy difficulty. But you know what? I got in the second half of Uncharted 3, and I just kind of smacked myself and said, this is not fun, this combat. It is just frustrating. And I became okay with putting it down to easy. Mm-hmm. And I did the same thing at the end of Mass Effect 3, because some little OCD, you know, person standing on my shoulder would have been happier if I just plugged away on the normal difficulty. But it just seems like there's so much great game content out there now. And, you know, obviously our lives have changed in a way that we don't get home at 3 o'clock anymore and have until, you know, 10 o'clock at night to play video games. So it's just, I'm starting to get better at kind of really looking at how much fun I'm having dictating mm-hmm. what I'm doing in games, and not just these relics of habits that just had me feeling like I couldn't really trade in Grand Theft Auto 4 until I had shot 100 pigeons.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Like, I one of the things that kind of made me a little nervous about that was, you know, at least for the first 5 or 6 years of Xbox, I was really sort of obsessed with achievements. And I felt compelled, if I couldn't finish a game on hard, I wanted to at least finish it on normal. I'm not a good enough gamer. I love games, but I will never be good enough to finish a shooter on hard or, you know, insane.
Or insane or punishing or whatever the hell they call it.
Nor do I give a shit. That's not, I mean, when I play a game, I kind of want to see all the content. And if it means that I have to go to a different difficulty level, then so be it. I don't care. I want to enjoy my experience, ultimately. And that's the thing. At the end of the day, I mean, I don't know. When I was a little kid, I was one of the suckers who bought the E.T. game for the Atari 2600. And that game, as we all know, was a piece of shit. But the thing is that, like, for my, you know, 6-year-old brain or 8-year-old brain, or however old I was when I was playing it, I didn't know that the game was terrible. I didn't know that games could be terrible. I felt like it
exactly
was my fault. Yeah, I felt like it was my fault that I kept falling into the pit and that I couldn't, you know, sort of extend my neck and get all the way up. Like, that was somehow my failing as a gamer. I didn't realize that it was the game's fault. And I kind of, I don't know, I don't, now I'm a grown man, and if I'm going to spend $60 on a game where there's a story to be told, I don't feel guilty about making sure that I can see the whole game. You know, I mean, yeah. I don't feel compelled to finish a game if I'm not enjoying it. You know, if a game's story kind of sucks, I'm not going to bother finishing it. But if the game's, you know, I mean, look, I was terrible at Mortal. I'm terrible at fighting games, but I felt compelled to see, like, all of Mortal Kombat, last year's Mortal Kombat game, just because that game was nuts. And I played it on, I finished it on very, very easy, or the easiest thing, because I just wanted to finish the damn thing. And it was, you know what, even if I only finished it on very, very easy, and that makes me, you know, a pussy or whatever, I don't care. I finished it. I got to see, like, the ending, and it was as bananas as I wanted it to be, and I felt okay with that. I don't feel bad about that at all.
I think that's good. I think the thing is, I would feel okay with that too, but not that long ago, I really would be inclined to just punish myself and force myself through on at least normal difficulty. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a pivot I'm making. But speaking of Mortal Kombat, I'm actually looking forward. That's one of the Vita games that I am looking forward to.
Seems
like there's really very little on the horizon, but I think the Vita is just such a great system for sports games and fighting games. And I've always sucked at fighting games, so I will be playing through Mortal Kombat on easy, but I do want to see how bonkers it is, because apparently it was a really, really good game.
That actually reminds me, how is the Vita treating you? Because we haven't spoken about it in a while.
You know, I think I'm going to say what a lot of people say. I think the Vita is a really great piece of hardware. It looks like, you know, they've just released Skype and they've just released a little drawing app, so I guess they're trying to make it do more. Mm-hmm. I just wish there were more games on the release list. I mean, I said it's a great fighting game system. It's a great sports game system. I suck at the former. I'm decent at the latter, so I've been playing really a lot of MLB The Show and Hot Shots Golf on it. Mm-hmm. And Hot Shots Golf has a great feature where they just have three daily tournaments, like three daily rounds you can play, and there's leaderboards and rankings. So, like, even if you're just going to it for, you know, one round of golf a day, it's a ton of fun. Mm-hmm. There's also a lot of games that I have that are pretty much just sitting there. One of them is a fighting game, Blaze Blue. The only reason I bought it was because I hear it had, like, great tutorials for everything, including, like, running forward and jumping, mm-hmm. which is the level of hand-holding I need in a fighting game.
Right.
But still, when it comes down to, you know, back, forward, half circle, X, B, whatever, mm-hmm. yeah, I still can't do that shit.
Yeah.
So I like the Vita a lot. I'm looking forward to Mortal Kombat on it. And I still love that cross-play with the MLB between PS3 and Vita, just being able to save my season to the cloud, play a couple games on my PS3, and then take it on the subway is just fantastic. So I just hope it sells enough that it gets software support.
Mm. Yeah, because it's been kind of falling apart a little bit. I mean, there was a story, I don't remember who had it, but that Amazon is selling used Vitas for $150.
Oof, I don't like to hear that.
That's a pretty amazing deal. And for, you know, it is a very sexy piece of software, so I hear. But I got to tell you, I've been riding the New York City subway for, you know, every day for the last, I don't know, ever since it came out. I have not seen a single Vita on the subway.
I'm trying to think if I've seen another one besides mine, and I don't think I have.
Yeah, I mean, I'm starting to see 3DSs now, but like maybe once every 2 weeks, and you know, I mean, I see more people, you know, playing with their new iPads and iPhones and stuff like that. So it's not necessarily people not wanting to bring them out on a subway, which I totally understand. I mean, I don't bring my iPad out on the subway at all. But I haven't seen any Vitas at all, I might have seen like one or two 3DSs in the last month, and yeah, it's weird. I was kind of jonesing for a 3DS there, and that Jones has faded, and the Vita definitely there's nothing really pulling me towards it. I mean, I'm glad to hear that you're enjoying Hot Shots, because I am a fan of that series, and if the Vita version was, like, really substantial, But I don't know that I can justify spending $150 for it just to play
that. Well, right, that's the thing. I mean, would you pay $200 just to play a portable Hot Shots golf system? I think the answer is no. And that's what's going to determine if the Vita is a good value for somebody. If there are like three or four games that you can get a lot of hours out of, then, you know, it might be worth your time. But yeah, otherwise, hang on. It's going to get cheaper. There's going to be a price cut for the holiday. And hopefully, Sony's got some announcements to make about the software lineup at E3. Because, I mean, I'm happy with it. I play tons of MLB The Show. I'll probably play that game until the next one comes out. But I'm sure there's plenty of people, you know, it's like the 3DS. They played it right out of the gate. It was cool for a while, and then it collected dust.
Yeah.
The reason I haven't gotten a 3DS yet is because I think Nintendo has told us, taught us that the second version of the system that they released always makes the first one look like a turd.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one already kind of looks like a turd.
Yeah.
Especially because it looks, I wonder kind of if the second one's going to have a second circle pad. Is that what they're calling
it? It sort of has to. I mean, the fact that they came out and, you know, added that accessory, you kind of think that it's sort of that they sort of have to, like they don't really have a choice. But, you know, again, it's sort of telling that, like, the most compelling software for the 3DS are basically remakes of, you know, N64 games. You know, like, is that, I don't know, is that really worth buying a system for? Is for Zelda?
Well, not for me. Because I never played it. Well, no, it wouldn't have made it worth the money. But that's really what tempted me, was Ocarina.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really made me want to play the game. Best version of ever, of one of the best games ever.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But really, it just ended up being the fact that the hardware is going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
So I just can't justify it.
Yeah. If I were to get a Vita, I think I'd have to, there'd have to be like some sort of, well, I'll be very curious to see what this BioShock experience is, which they'll probably announce at E3. I mean, they talked about it for a little bit. There's going to be some sort of BioShock Infinite Vita experience.
Well, I haven't heard about that.
Yeah, I don't know if Ken Levine is as hands-on with it as he's going to be with Infinite, but I know that there's going to be some sort of Vita experience. And I would also, I know this is a bit of a stretch, but if there's some sort of GTA game for Vita that isn't like not Liberty City Stories, or, you know, I don't want to do
Chinatown.
Three. Yeah, I don't want to do Chinatown Wars. I don't want to
do. Did they release Chinatown on PSP? They did,
I don't know.
Right?
I'm not sure. I know that it's on iOS.
I think they did. And if they did, I might just have to see if it's on the store for Vita. Because you know what I did download for Vita? I was thinking, okay, you know what I would like to round out the lineup is a good kind of chunky RPG. But they haven't really released anything yet. So I went looking at the PSP library and ended up downloading Persona 3,
mm-hmm.
which is that like crazy Japanese game that's like a kind of like turn-based RPG / dating sim.
Right.
I've played maybe a half hour of it. It's a very Japanese game, but interesting so far. So I'm glad to have an RPG on there. But yeah, I mean, they've really got to come out with some software announcements. Who would buy it for Christmas based on the current library?
Well, I don't think anyone's bought it for anything. I mean, it's still being outsold by the original PSP, which has been dying a slow death for, you know, the better part of 2 years now. I think for me, I agree. Like, I would want some sort of meaty RPG. I would want, I don't know, Final Fantasy. I'd even do a port of, like, 10 or 12 or something. Like, I haven't played either of those games because I never had a PS2. If they made a good Vita port of one of those games, I would totally do it. And if Rockstar did something truly compelling in the Vita space, I would kind of have to. But by the same token, you know, a lot of these experiences are on the iPad also, and
yeah.
I kind of love my iPad. I love the hell out of it.
I get it. But there still is only. I'm not going to say there's only so far you can go without tactile controls. You can go as far, but you have to go in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
So You know what? I think when the iPhone first came out, I really was kind of skeptical but hopeful about whether there could be compelling games on it, because it didn't have any controllers. And obviously, you know, we've seen a lot of great stuff on the iPhone and iPad since. But there still is something about, you know, having those dual sticks and just the layout that you're used to and playing what are really real console games. I mean, in some cases, they're just twitchy games or what have you, but one will never completely replace the other for me. I don't feel like I need a portable console experience, but for me, it's a nice to have. And it's something that I don't think the iPad will fully replace.
That's a fair point. And definitely, you know, I mean, I've played, you know, Street Fighter 4 for about 5 minutes on my iPhone, and it is definitely not the same thing as playing with a controller in your hand. But by the same token, you know, I have played some adventure games that do work. You know, I mean, and I'm not, and I've obviously, you know, stuff like Jetpack Joyride and, you know, like...
Fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff is great, but there can be deeper experiences. And, you know, Sword and Sorcery is a great example of using that tactile sensation to its full effect. I'm kind of... I'm almost afraid. I was tempted to sort of buy the version on Steam, but I kind of don't want to, because I like playing with a mouse. Kind of, there's something about touching that screen with your fingers that really, I don't know. I mean, I guess the only way it could be better is if the screen actually vibrated when you touched it. But you know, that's
right. Thing actually that the Vita does have that's nice is the touchscreen.
Right.
And I think that in, you know, in some games it's integrated in a really nice way. So for example, in MLB, you know, you generally do control it with the sticks and everything, but when you're pitching and you want to place a pitch, you just touch the area of the strike zone. So and they become, things like that become second nature. So it's nice to see that Sony actually, I'm glad there's a touch screen there. Mm-hmm. Because it is useful in some more traditional games, and also it means if there are any insanely successful iOS games, they might make their way over to that platform eventually.
Yeah.
But the back touch is useless.
Yeah.
So yeah, I still don't have an iPad. I covet an iPad.
Well, I mean, you know, I can justify it because it's got a whole bunch of cool, like, music stuff with it, and, you know, having my Kindle library on there. I mean, it's a really, really cool device. I will concede that there isn't a, you know, as cool as Sword and Sorcery is and stuff, and I've downloaded, you know, tons of games since I bought it, there isn't really any sort of must-have... I haven't played anything on it that's really sort of blown me away. I mean, even Infinity Blade 2, I mean, that game looks amazing and it is fun, but it's not, at the end of the day, it is kind of, you know, it's not terribly deep. And, you know, but I think the iPad has a ton of potential. I mean, considering how well Apple as a company is doing, developers are flocking over there, and I would imagine that space is just going to get more and more robust.
Oh, yeah, like, hey, here's your choice. Develop a game, put it out at the price you want to a giant mainstream core market that can pick it up for $2 and it could, you know, it might just catch fire and make you a millionaire. Or try and get into a crowded Microsoft Xbox Live Arcade platform, deal with all the certification bullshit they put you through. By the way, be prepared to pay them almost all your profits. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe you get shuffled out the door on a Friday with two other XBL games, you know, the week after, you know, House Party or one of their other Summer of Arcade promotions ends. I mean, it's just for a small shop, it's a much more attractive proposition, which is great because, I mean, we're seeing it. It's just this incubator now of creativity. There's a lot of crap out there, but it's not that much of a risk for a talented developer to get out there and try something.
I'll be honest with you. It kind of broke my heart a little bit to see, like Fez, I think as of right now, it's got like if you look at the leaderboards, I think there's only about like 65,000 people on it. Whereas Trials Evolution, I mean, I guess it's kind of not fair because Trials Evolution, I think, is the biggest XBLA game of all time.
Oh,
but,
really?
Yeah, but there's, you know, there's like 150,000 people on it, 200,000 people. There are thousands, like orders of magnitude. But when you think about it, you know, Fez has been in development for 5 years, and they've only sold 60,000 copies, and that number is not going to go up. And I'd be amazed if they broke even. And I'll be honest with you, if they ported it over to iOS, which they absolutely could do, I think they would make a ton of money.
And I bet you they will.
And it wouldn't surprise me at all if... I mean, maybe they have some sort of exclusivity thing with Microsoft or something. Maybe Microsoft would want to hold it for some sort of Microsoft tablet if they have one coming out. But I could see it making a killing on iOS. And
well, you know, I think the strategy. Well, me, I don't know if this was explicitly their strategy. They might just eventually go to iOS just to try and make whatever money they can. But something I've seen before with iOS from PopCap is like, you know, they release Bejeweled 3, Juggernaut. Mm-hmm. PC, you know, it's $20. Maybe it was $30. I don't know.
I think it was $20.
Okay, so it's $20. So the whole world buys it. Like, they're certainly not in a rush to put it out on iOS. Is it out on iOS yet?
Well, you know what they've done? It's kind of interesting. They've taken, like, the core, like, main mode of Bejeweled 3, which is the same sort of Match 3 game that we've been playing for 15 years or whatever. And right. That's there. And they've added two modes from... Have you played Bejeweled 3?
Yes.
Okay.
PC.
So they've added to the iOS version, they have added the Diamond Mine mode and the Butterflies mode.
Okay. So, now, and what's it cost?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I know
you
that...
Know, I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, look it up. I know that their iOS game... Like, I've always felt that their PC stuff was really overpriced. And the iOS, like, I know that Plants and Zombies for iPad is like $6, and I know that because I just bought it, even though I've owned it for every platform already, and it's kind of ridiculous that I keep buying it.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, man, I would spend $5 just to get that poker mode from Bejeweled 3 into an iOS version, because that, oh my goodness, that of all the modes in Bejeweled 3, that one was maybe my favorite. And,
I think that they probably will release Bejeweled 3, like with that same feature set as the PC game, as an iOS game. I think they're just waiting until the last person on Earth pays their $20 for it, so they can release it for $2.99 and get all those same people to buy a second copy.
Well, but by the same token, they would probably sell it for $4 or $5 because they can, and because saps
right.
like me will totally do it. And then they can do, you know, like one of those like crazy sales where, you know, everything's a dollar or something. Like EA does that a lot, and you know, they try
hard,
to jack
you know
up
what?
Their
it's
presence.
It's hard for me to get pissed off because, like, okay, I pay $20 for the PC version, I pay say $5 for the iOS version, like. I put a lot of hours into Bejeweled. Like,
yeah.
I can never say that I did not get $25 worth of fun out of it.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I wouldn't begrudge them for that either. I'll tell you what. Speaking of terrible segues, I'm looking over at my outline here.
I'm listening.
Things that I guess I have gotten my money's worth and that I kind of don't care any about anymore. Kind of don't care about the Old Republic anymore.
Yeah.
It's weird. I haven't touched it, my dude, in like a month, maybe more. I got my guy up to level 40. He's on Hoth. He's got like one dude left to kill before I can get off that planet. But there's no one on whenever, like, the last couple times I logged on, there were maybe six other people there, and they were all on other sides of the planet, and it's just, I don't know.
But you've hit now a difficulty spike that is like, you know, that's, difficulty spikes are often what make people walk away from games, right? If you did, if you didn't hit that, if you were able to kill that boss on your own,
that would
you'd still be playing, or
if I were able to beat that boss on my own, yeah, I would probably get at least a couple more hours momentum from that. Because as soon as I beat that guy, I would be able to leave that planet, and I'd be able to go somewhere else and do some other missions and kind
so
of
what
screw
act
around.
Are you in now, or what? Does it go by acts? Three acts?
I think it's chapters instead of acts, which is a little weird. I'm in chapter two.
It should really be episodes.
It should. I guess, yeah, I mean, the way that the designers were describing it was that it's like kind of Knights of the Old Republic 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I think that everyone's first, everyone's first chapter would be KOTOR 3. You know, I mean, I definitely feel like I got my money's worth out of that side of it. But I don't know, like, the game, like, as cool as it, I had a lot of fun with it. I thought, you know, it looked pretty good for an MMO. It was remarkably stable. I didn't really have that many problems with it. You know, it did everything I wanted it to do. I kind of just didn't give a shit after a while, because there's only so much grinding. And the combat wasn't really that different from anything else I'd done before, and I found myself, like, not really caring about the dialogue and kind of skipping through it, and I just, you know... And I wasn't playing it with anybody, because hardly anyone was on my server. I mean, I picked my server because when I got on, it was one of the only ones that wasn't crashing all the time, but that's the price you pay, is that no one's really on it, even during peak hours, so...
Yeah, I'm on that same server, and it's not crowded.
Yeah.
But I also am just pretty much playing it like a single-player game. I'm still having fun with it, although I stepped away from it for, like, probably the last week or two.
Well, but you also had Mass Effect to go through, and you also, you know...
That's it. And you know what? Now I could go back to Tor, but, man, I'm kind of epic RPG'd out at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So, what I actually started playing is Modern Warfare 3, which I bought on day one and still haven't played. So I think I just need my palette and have a good Infinity Ward, you know, bullshit story, lots of bad guys shooter run.
I will say that, you know, as much as I find those games kind of whatever, they do serve as a good palate cleanser. I think there's definitely,
and you know, they don't wear out
that.
Their welcome, right? Like 6 hours for a shooter, okay, that's cool.
Yeah, you know, and you can certainly, if you don't, you can sort of rush through that on easy or whatever. I mean, I played it on normal. I'll never forget this. Actually, I started the game up, and I'm in, you know, New York, and the sky is falling all around me. I walk literally 5 steps. And I get shot in the face by an enemy that I didn't see. I had no idea where he was. I was kind of just following my icon, and suddenly I got shot. I had no idea where the enemy was. I mean, I'm not, you know, the greatest gamer in the world, but I got killed without even
I'm just
doing what I was
you,
doing.
Like, walking down the center of the street, hands at your sides.
Yeah, do. Yep. Yeah, they are, yeah. Right now, I'm kind of just biding my time until... say again?
I was just going to ask you, what are you excited for coming up?
I am kind of foaming at the mouth for Max Payne. Because that looks like this year's Rockstar opus. I feel like they've really gotten into a groove lately. You know? Like, starting with Grand Theft Auto 4... They've really sort of upped the ante. And if you look, you know, I mean, Red Dead sort of took it to another level. And L.A. Noire...
Not like Grand Theft Auto 3 and Vice City and San Andreas and Bully and, like, where's the... They're just kind of continuing a trend that's been going on for a long time.
Yeah, they've really not done anything terrible in a while. Red Dead is still one of my favorite games of this generation, if not my favorite. I feel like when Grand Theft Auto V eventually comes out, it needs to have Red Dead's combat system, or, you know, whatever the latest iteration of it was, because the combat in Red Dead, for me, was so much fun, and it made so much sense, and, like, I don't know, whatever. Point being is that L.A. Noire, you know, had its flaws, but it was still a really enjoyable experience, at least for me. And everything that I've seen of Max Payne 3 looks like they've taken like this engine that they've been running everything on. I don't know, man. It just, it looks so good. Like, they really have understood what makes Max Payne awesome. Like, the bullet time, just the fact that the guns just kick so much ass, the fact that it looks incredible, that everything
the
is really...
The fact that he's, like, even more pissed than ever.
I know.
How is that even possible?
How much more noir, like, depressed, manic can that guy be? And the answer is none more. He's just... Yeah, but that game looks amazing. I'm really excited about it. It's been a while since
I haven't really been following it actively again because it's a game I'm kind of waiting for the reviews, and just like, you know, if it gets nines and tens and whatever, like that's cool with me and I will totally get it. Is there what's the deal with multiplayer? Anything?
There is multiplayer and there is some sort of bullet time aspect to it, and I think there's even some sort of you know, they did that social club initiative that they've been doing for the last couple games, and I know that I seem to recall something about how like Max Payne multiplayer, like the social club will eventually have some sort of tie-in with GTA 5, I think. I didn't quite understand how that worked, but yeah, there will be multiplayer. Man, just that game looks so great, and I mean, I'm due for a Rockstar fix. It's been a while.
I know. Well, I got to tell you, when I look to next generation, like, and the game that will blow my mind, I think about the next Red Dead game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I hope that it is like maybe it'd be like a launch game for, you know, the next Xbox or whatever. But I really want that game.
I would be very happy to wait until the next generation for Red Dead 2. You know, I feel like GTA 5 will probably come out next year. Like, Rockstar basically just, like, one big release a year. So, you know, Max Payne will sort of take care of it this year. And unless they're busting out Table Tennis 2, which I would love, I think, like, GTA 5 will be the 360 and PS3 swan song. And then Red Dead 2 will launch the new console, and that would be, I'd be happy with that. I'd be super happy with that.
I mean, it's great for them. I mean, they have just another, I mean, that was a mega hit, right? They've just created another monster franchise.
Yeah.
Grand Theft Auto, except it's cowboys. Okay, yes, please.
Mm-hmm. I personally, I would love to see LA Noir 2. I would like to see them fix the things that were wrong in the first game. And I
think a lot of it is really, really fixable.
Yeah, I absolutely. I think that, you know, the Brendan McNamara, like his original vision for the game, I mean, you can sort of see Rockstar's, you know, fingerprints all over it in terms of, you know, the open world and the combat and stuff like that. But you can also see, like, just how stylish it was and, you know, like, the attention to detail, the music, the attention to period. You know, I think you could do that game without the tech as long as the right, like, the facial tech. I mean, that was really expensive. And if that's what's holding development on a new game, I think you can do that game without the tech. Because the tech was amazing, but the acting was kind of so hammy that it didn't really matter. And the writing, and you know what I mean? Like, I would love to see LA Noir's facial tech in the next Mass Effect game, to be honest with you, because that's where character action actually matters.
For sure.
And, you know, like, that game... You know, BioWare should really get their hands on that tech. But in terms of, you know, I don't know. I think
my thing with LA Noir, and I didn't get through it. I mean, the things are fixable. I think part of it was pacing. I think, you know, the weird climax came a little early, and then you were in arson. It was just weirdly paced for me. Mm-hmm. And then I eventually just ran out of gas. But I also think it was just flabby. Like, if it was a tight game. You know, it was a huge open world, but nothing to do in it. And, you know, I don't like to fast travel. That's another of my weird things. But man, it took forever to drive across that town.
Yeah.
And, you know, but I think that trimmed down and more focused and directed, yeah, it was a really stylish game, and just the art, and as you say, the music, just, it could be really, really fun to revisit L.A. Noire. And I just think this generation, and we may have talked about this last time, is where really the second game in the franchise has often been just markedly better than the first, and it really kind of sets the standard going forward. And I look at Gears of War 2. There was not Gears of War 3 is great, but it wasn't the same kind of leap. Same
Mass Effect 2.
Yeah, Mass Effect 2. There you go.
Because that's the thing. Because they don't, you know, the first game, you have to build the engine, you have to build the IP, you have to build the characters, you have to get people familiar with the story. For the second game, you don't have to do all that stuff. You can just simply focus on iterating how to make the game experience better. And that's why, movies, it doesn't quite work. But with games, the second game is usually, if the developer's, like, paying attention to what they're doing, the second game is usually quite good. Now, there are obviously exceptions like Bioshock 2, but the original developer didn't handle that, so you can't necessarily include that. Like, if the same developer is in charge of the sequel, generally, yeah, the improvements are all in the right place. So, right. Are you looking forward to anything in particular?
Well, I'll tell you what. As we speak, I'm downloading Walking Dead.
For which system?
For 360.
Cool.
And I don't know, have you read the comics? Do you watch the show? Are you into Walking Dead at all?
I did not read the comics. My wife watches the show somewhat religiously, and I walk in from time to time and see what's going on. But I'm not, I'm more of a fan of Telltale than I am of the game or the
right.
franchise.
So I mean, the comics, I think, are actually mostly great. The show I've got problems with. I just don't think it's really executing well. But the thing about the Walking Dead game, as I understand it, is it happens in the same universe, so like life or death consequences to basically everything. But it doesn't follow the same storyline or characters or anything as the book, so it's just basically a chance to have a fresh Walking Dead style experience in that world, which is really intriguing to me. And, you know, apparently you make decisions that really do have ripples throughout. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in a split second, you'll have to decide which of two characters to save. Mm. Or if you share food here or there, it may just have actual consequences in ways that you can't see. And I think the game is accepting somewhat of a light burden because it's not a very mechanical game, as I understand it. It's really just, it's able to kind of focus on the story and take a pretty light touch as far as how it tells it to you, just showing a lot rather than making you kind of do a lot of work to make the story happen. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I'm really looking forward to that. And the other thing that I'm really interested in is Minecraft 360. That's not what it's actually called. It's like,
well, it's Minecraft, but it's on the Xbox.
Right.
Why the 360 and not the PC version?
Well, I just generally prefer to, you know, be on the couch on the big TV if I can, although, you know, is it going to be as good with an Xbox interface? That remains to be seen. And I also just really like how easy it is to connect with friends and do multiplayer stuff. Like, I tinkered a very, very tiny bit with Minecraft on the PC. But I think that I feel like the Xbox community is just where it benefits from being a larger mainstream community that could kind of, I don't know, just make it easy to do Minecraft multiplayer, because I understand it's a real pain in the ass with the PC. And kind of, I think multiplayer is what would actually motivate me to contribute to building a world rather than just like the slog on your own.
Yeah,
that I found that it involved in the PC version.
I'm curious about it, but I've always been weird about sandboxes that are too abstract. I don't know what to do. Like I appreciate how open ended it is. I appreciate how creative you can be, and yet if I don't have some sort of guidance. You know, like when I played with Legos when I was a kid, I was never the kind of kid to like sort of build my own fortress. I would follow the model. I would follow the instructions for the P piece that my box was meant to build, and I would build that, and I would be totally thrilled that I built it, and I would take it apart, and I would build it again, and just sort of enjoy the process of creating a solid thing. I was never an architect in that regard. So when I see people building, like, you know, 1-to-1 ratio of the Starship Enterprise, or, you know, like a graphing calculator I just saw, like someone on YouTube put together, like, I'm like, that's amazing, you guys, but whoa, I just... That's way beyond my skill set. I'm having a hard enough time with Fez. I'm not going to, you know, deal with...
Well, I mean, that's one great thing about user-generated content tools is that there are plenty of people out there who are batshit enough to go and make insane things. Like somebody I understand for the anniversary of the Titanic used Little Big Planet to basically reenact the entire movie of Titanic. So I'm not that person, but I love that that person is out there, and sure, that person is getting access to things like Little Big Planet and Minecraft to do all these things. I guess with Minecraft, I'm like you. Like, I just am standing there, and I'm like, okay, what the hell do I do now? I guess I'm just hoping that if it's on Xbox, it's going to have this kind of more mainstream wave of enthusiasm that I might get caught up in. So translation is, I'm going to buy it, I'm going to play it for an hour, and then I'm going to go back and play some more MLB The Show.
When does it come out? It comes out pretty soon, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's... Is it... are they? What's the spring promotion they're doing?
Oh, yeah, who knows? They're so terrible with, like... I guess it's going to be coming out soon, though, if it's part of this current promotion. Well, I don't know.
At least, you know, I'm looking at IGN. It says May 9th.
That's pretty soon.
Yeah.
That's in a couple weeks. All right. Well, that might be something to check out, I guess. We've basically got, like, 3 minutes before we hit an hour. So is there any other thing you want to touch on real quick before we call it a night?
You know what? Have you you've been following Verge and the whole Polygon situation? I just thought, you know, we both consume a lot of gaming media, so I don't know if you've been checking that out at all.
No.
Do you know anything about that?
What is it?
That's basically where this new, I guess the Verge does like tech content, but they just basically like got together and just started hiring up all these vets from the gaming journalism industry, and they got Chris Grant and Justin McElroy and Griffin McElroy from Joystick, and Arthur Geese, who was with IGN and then Joystick, and I think they have like Brian Crescente, but they've got like all these guys, and they're just basically, I think, looking to put together something that would really compete with IGN. But they've got really great personalities behind
whatever
them.
Happened to N'Guy Kroll?
You know, did you listen to that podcast, Out of the Game?
No.
It was N'Guy. It was Luke Smith at Bungie. It was Jeff Green. And it was... I'm totally going to flake on the last dude. He was an ex-1UP guy. But just kind of talking about stuff since they were out of the games journalism business and kind of into the developer community, or N'Guy was doing kind of...
Yeah, I heard they were doing like, yeah, they were doing consulting, like sort of fixing...
So I think N'Guy, I don't really know what he does, but I think he may have our dream job, which is game companies hire him and pay him a lot of money to come check out their awesome game that they're working on and tell them what's awesome about it, what's not.
So he basically does, he's like the punch-up equivalent of the game industry. Like, you know, Hollywood hires comedians to punch up their scripts.
Right.
Game companies hire this guy to fix conceptually.
That's my impression, and it's qualified only by the statement that it may be entirely inaccurate.
I heard some interesting news that my favorite gaming journalist guy, Tom Bissell, he's writing the script for the new Jonathan Blow game.
No kidding.
Yeah, which is probably coming out next year, I guess. But yeah, and he just came out with a book called Magic Hours, which is about the creative process, which isn't necessarily video game focused, but I looked forward to checking it out at some point. Well, anyway,
I read his other book, Extra Lives.
Yeah,
really good stuff.
That book is great. All right. Well, that being said, we are pretty much coming up on the 1 hour mark, and we said we would go 1 hour, and so here we are.
Okay. What are you going to go play tonight?
What am I going to go play? I might do a little Tiger 13, but I will probably go back to Jetpack Joyride on my iPad. What about you?
Well, I think I'm going to check out Walking Dead, and then I've got Bill Maher later on too.
Rock on. All right. Well, we will hopefully not take 3 months to do this again. And thank you for listening. And we will see you next time. Thanks a lot, everybody.